This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenben
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, An Unnatural Catastrophe, the U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. 1 week ago, a 7.0 earthquake laid waste to Haiti, particularly its capital, Port-au-Prince, killing at least 200,000 people and making homeless 3 million people, 1 million in the capital itself. Today on Taking Aim, we're going to discuss the military adventure now underway, spearheaded by the United States along with the United Nations, the occupation, the reoccupation of Haiti. We will also discuss the impoverishment of Haiti, the devastation, how Haiti has been laid waste by imperial powers, first colonial powers, then imperial powers throughout its history. First, let us go to Ralph Poynter for another update on the case of Lynn Stewart. Ralph?
Yes, Maya, how are you? We have this situation due to the sudden orders from the Second Circuit on the appeal that Lynn go right to jail. No time to think about it. I think it was 3 days after the appeal was denied, she was ordered to jail, not in the usual fashion. The problem with it is she had scheduled an operation the 7th of December. She had to report almost immediately, and she did, and she had no time to get her operation. So she went to prison in a situation where people say you don't want to go. You don't want to go to a prison if you're sick. And she's been back and forth in the prison hospital since she was in there due to high blood pressure and high heart rate. We're having trouble now because in the last few days she has been laid low by the medicine she was given. My daughter, who is also a doctor, called and needed information on her mother's case, and they were tight-lipped. And my daughter commented that they gave her every test but the test they should have given her. And the test she said they should have given her is a thyroid test. And I'm hoping, after speaking to Liz Fink, Sarah Kunstler, and the attorneys, and my daughter, that this is being worked out now because the head doctor was out of town and no one had authority to make any changes. So Lynn has not taken her medicine on orders of my daughter. It was the wrong medicine. The dosage was too high. It just put her to sleep. She has slept for 2 days, not eaten, turned down legal visits because she said she just didn't have the heart to do it. She told her bunk mates to make sure she got up for the personal visit, which I got yesterday, but when I'm talking to her, she says, I'm tired. After standing 5 minutes, she had to sit back down. So that is a medical problem. We're working on it, and I hope that something is being done as we speak.
Ralph, when she was brought to the hospital, she was shackled, spread-eagle, to the posts of the bed.
Yes, I think I talked about her being shackled hand and foot. You know, she's 70. You have to see her to appreciate this. The first time she went to the hospital, they gave her the treatment shackled. And so after the guards had shackled her, they looked at her. And she couldn't walk. So she said she had two gentlemen guards. They were civil. And they said to her, Miss Stewart, do you mind if we form a hand brace here and carry you? So that's how she went. So then the second time she had guards and they looked and they said, we're not going to put two women guards. And he says, we're not going to shackle you by the feet because we can't carry you. This time she went, they had her shackled to the bed, spread eagle, but she says a guard came in after about a half hour and took her feet off. And then another half hour later, a guard came in and took one of her hands off and said, we have to, the law is you have to be cuffed to the bed. So she says, you can imagine the sleep I didn't get. And then she came back with the medicine, and she's been sleeping ever since. This is the condition of Lynn.
They've been giving her the wrong medication. They've been taking in her repeatedly for rapid heart rate and for inordinately high blood pressure. This is a vindictive and criminal process, and they are jeopardizing Lynn.
As you said early on, Lynn is the point person in these false flag operations with Emad Salem coming in. The FBI, the CIA, the Egyptian government agent coming in and setting up a false situation, enlisting people while they do the so-called crime or they do the so-called conspiracy, And then they hook people in the net, and then they scream, terror, terror, terror.
Right.
It just works, and they're doing it again and again, and I'm just wondering, when do the American people get wise to this total nonsense?
They're escalating it every minute with the show trial they're planning for the non-existent Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, with this Northwest 253 at an airport that the Israeli intelligence totally control, with a young man who hasn't got a passport, who doesn't have a credit card, who's on a terror watch list, and who is escorted by suited people, monitored by the intelligence services at every second of the way. A false flag operation, the escalation of terror, 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 while they invade country after country, Yemen on the agenda, and Haiti currently in their terrible sights.
Well, I was asked again last night why they put Lynn Stewart in jail instantly. And I said, because Lynn Stewart would be guilty of her original crime again. She would tell the truth about the situation. So they put her away.
Right.
Ralph, I'd like to mention that Lynn Stewart was elected to the WBAI local station board, and it is important to keep her seated on this board, incredible spokesperson. Also, I heard that there's a move to run Lynn for the Senate seat in New York.
I was asked to pass it on to Lynn. Would she be willing to serve if called? And her answer yesterday was yes. I'm hoping that this becomes real and that she does run for the Senate seat, because she has a lot to say.
In the tradition of Gene Debs, received over a million votes from prison. Ralph, we want everybody to mobilize around the issue of Lynn's situation.
Ralph, could you please give the address for reaching Lynn? She's been receiving letters from people worldwide, and this has had a great impact on the prison authorities.
Yes, Lynn Stewart, L-Y-N-N-E, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007, 2 South, and the number is 53504-054. She answers every letter with a return address. Remember, they read everything that you write and everything that she writes, but she is delighted. This is what keeps her alive, reading and answering her mail. Please write, and please writing to the Lynn Stewart Defense Committee and telling the judge how you feel.
Write to the judge, brothers and sisters. Write to the prison authorities. Let's be very clear what we're describing here. Lynn is at risk. Mobilize.
Her legal address, Lynn Stewart Defense Committee, 350 Broadway, New York, New York. The last time when they presented over 1,000 letters to the judge, letters were presented to the judge again. Just stay in touch.
Thank you, Ralph.
I would ask everybody to look at Lynn Stewart's website, because you have all the information of how to stream Taking Aim on Lynn Stewart website, lynnstewart.org.
Thanks, Ralph. We'll be with you next week.
Okay, and thank you so much.
And now to our program, An Unnatural Catastrophe, the U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. When Secretary of State Hillary Clinton landed in Haiti to meet with Haitian President René Préval, she demanded the imposition of emergency decree, martial law. And that was her primary purpose. She said, the decree would give the government an enormous amount of authority, which in practice they would delegate to us, meaning the U.S. military. Monday, 6 days after the magnitude 7 earthquake laid waste Haiti, and particularly its capital, Port-au-Prince, the state of emergency was created, creating martial law conditions that will be enforced by the U.S. military. In fact, landing the U.S. military in Haiti was the primary preoccupation of President Obama and the Department of Defense. This is what happened. It has frustrated everyone. Aid was not the first priority, bringing water, food, and medical attention to the people of Haiti. Ralph?
Hundreds of thousands of Haitians in peril for lack of water, food, and medical supplies. And the imposition of martial law makes clear, as the World Socialist website points out presciently, that the central preoccupation of the U.S. operation has nothing to do with saving lives, but to establish military control over the nation. In a preview of the widespread repression in active preparation and engagement, the United Nations troops have fired bullets on a crowd of desperate people because they had congregated, quote, too close, unquote, to the gate of the Port-au-Prince airport, an entry point for food, medicine, water, and supplies coming into the country. The airport is now militarized under U.S. control. It is the staging point for the vast influx of American military forces in Haiti, and Haitian riot police are firing on to break up crowds in the city center. In fact, the size of the U.S. force in Haiti is now swelled to 7,500 soldiers officially. In fact, it's larger than that. Most of those stationed on warships off Haiti's coast. Two companies of the 82nd U.S. Airborne are scheduled to join 1,000 soldiers on the ground at the airport. And on Sunday, President Obama signed an executive order mobilizing the military reserves for service in Haiti. Brothers and sisters, the U.S. is beefing up its military presence even as the death toll in Haiti escalates. More than 70,000 corpses were buried in mass graves. The Secretary of State for Literacy of Haiti, Carol Joseph, stated the government now estimates that the final death toll will surpass 200,000. Officials are now talking about a minimum of 500,000, and they have no way of recording the actual number of dead because the bodies are being left buried under the rubble. This will make the earthquake the deadliest on record, a staggering toll for a country of 10 million people. Over 1.5 million Haitians are already homeless. That number will escalate as well. The media accounts on Monday acknowledged that aid is not reaching the capital. This is 1 week after the earthquake struck, 6 days after the quake. Precious little aid is getting beyond airport perimeters, stated the British London Times. Emergency aid is barely reaching some parts of the earthquake-devastated capital, but not reaching the population. Maya?
Ralph, it has reached a point that the French Cooperation Minister, Alain Joyandet, on Monday issued a formal complaint to the Obama administration over the U.S. military's arbitrary control of the Port-au-Prince airport. Two French relief planes have been turned away over the weekend. These are for Doctors Without Borders. Doctors Without Borders has served throughout the world in emergency situations and has a permanent presence in Haiti. They were bringing in a field hospital, an inflatable field hospital, and were forced to land in the Dominican Republic and arrange transportation, delaying the setup of this hospital with its operating tables for 48 hours. Then also their supply, the replenishment of their supply. There are no antibiotics in Haiti. There are no appropriate surgical instruments. This also was diverted. I have to mention also that in the first hours after the earthquake struck, UNICEF brought a plane with supplies from Panama. And this, too, was turned back by the U.S. military, stating that the preference, the priority, was to have the U.S. Marine Expeditionary Force landing.
The same has happened with Doctors Without Borders. The same has happened with the World Food Program. The same has happened with field hospitals that have been diverted actually to Honduras. They have been obliged to go to the Dominican Republic and to go by truck to try to get into Haiti. They are being deliberately obstructed and stalled, exactly as was done at the time of Katrina, when aid was turned back, when even military helicopters carrying medicine and aid were refused entry, and when a helicopter pilot at the time of Katrina was actually court-martialed, subject to court-martial for actually flying in supplies. At a camp in Chal, residents stated that UN soldiers who had arrived tossing biscuit packages from the back of a truck without water. Quote, "We've been waiting since Tuesday. That's all there is," said Van Luis Paul, a father of three, showing an empty biscuit package to a reporter. "We don't need military aid. We need food and shelter," a man yelled at UN Secretary Ban Ki-moon as he visited Port-au-Prince for a fleeting moment. Even in the heart of the capital, enormous tent cities next to the flattened National Palace have had no aid, according to the Washington Post. Quote, "I've been here every day. I hear they gave away some food," said Jean-Marie Margaret Barrett, who was in the encampment. If you tell me they've been giving out food, I will believe you, but we've been on this spot since the day of the earthquake. We have not seen anyone give away anything to anybody. Have we been abandoned? Where is the food? Shouted Jean-Michel Janté in a downtown Port-au-Prince street, temperatures reaching the high 80s with an acute need for water, and water is being packaged and selling for $6 a bottle. The Port-au-Prince water supplies are destroyed or polluted. More than three times Haiti's average daily income is required for a bottle of water. A quarter of a million Haitians injured in the quake, a minimum estimate. Open wounds, thousands dying of infections. Rescuers having given up for dead tens of thousands of Haitians who are trapped under the rubble of collapsed buildings. The United Nations reports that only 70 people have been saved in 5 days of rescue operations. 70 people, brothers and sisters. When they want to do a military operation, they have C-4 transports 24 hours around the clock. They drop runways on the ground wherever they want to launch a military undertaking. The sky is covered with parachutes dropping supplies for the military operation. Nothing of the kind in suffering Haiti. The extent of the devastation outside of Port-au-Prince is only now coming to light. Laogan, a city of 100,000, has lost 90% of its structures. 12 miles west of Port-au-Prince, Laogan is near the epicenter. No relief supplies have reached the city. And then there are reports of looting, which means that when you have a crowd of people waiting for food or water, and they drop one packet of water, and people are grabbing for it, they call that a riot.
Well, Ralph, CNN showed a small example of the looting, and the reporters, both on CNN and MSNBC, have been the first to say that these are isolated circumstances. But what you saw was the looting of candles from a shop. Candles. There's no electricity. What people were taking were basic necessities. Any facility that has food should be opened. That food should be given out. This is necessity. And the reporters have been astute enough to not call it looting. Looting and security are the words of the U.S. military, the U.S. administration, and the United Nations. The Haitian people have a long, long history, not just of struggle, but of popular organizations. And these popular organizations, the UN has been consistently trying to destroy. But these popular organizations exist despite the attack by the United Nations occupying force. And it is these popular organizations that can be mobilized. The Haitian government has been reduced to the role of mortuary, of mass graves, of burying people. That has been the function. Everything has been forced to be turned over to the U.S. occupying force. Not the first occupying force, something we will discuss today and in the weeks ahead. This is a concerted effort. So when Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton, and former President George Bush write in the New York Times, the Sunday opinion section, a helping hand for Haiti. And they write, there are great reasons to hope. For the first time in our lifetimes, Haiti's government is committed to building a modern economy, and it has a comprehensive economic plan to create jobs. What are they talking about? The total leveling of Port-au-Prince and the building facilities for U.S. investment. They are talking about the reoccupation of Haiti. Remember, it is Bill Clinton who imposed an embargo on Haiti. And despite his crocodile tears, Bill Clinton is sent an occupying army. Bill Clinton is among those who have destroyed Haitian self-determination.
Well, Maya, the Washington Post reports exactly what they mean by rioting. You have people who have been looking for food, trying to find food, and they are called looters, and they are being executed on the spot. In fact, the accounts in the established press are absolutely explicit about this. National Public Radio reporter Carrie Kahn witnessed police forcing men to lie down face first before executing them. A crowd gathered as the police stood guard as one of the men slowly bled to death. The U.S. reported the U.S. is concerned about a far broader social eruption in Haiti than looting. The Washington Post cites widespread apprehension that there will be mass uprising as hundreds of thousands of people lacking food, water, and electricity begin to react. Consequently, the Haitian emergency decree gives the United States military the legal pretext for the suppression of the entire population. Quote, "We need a safe and secure environment," said General Ken Keene of the U.S. Southern Command. Keene warned of increasing incidents of security, and we are going to deal with this as we go forward. We're talking about military domination, not aid to the population.
And Ralph, this is exactly, the mass mobilization is exactly what they fear most. This is what happened in 1989 when there was a huge mass upsurge that rocked Haiti and prompted the struggle against the imperialist debt, that is the IMF. And there's a $1.1 billion debt against the Haitian people because when Aristide became president, he negotiated with the International Monetary Fund to assume the $800 million of the Duvalier debt, that is the money that had been given by the International Monetary Fund and banking institutions throughout the world, and the Duvaliers took off with them into secret bank accounts throughout the world. But the Aristide government assumed this debt, and Haiti has been paying $50 million a year to the International Monetary Fund and also primarily to the United States, $50 million a year. This is in the country that is the poorest in the entire Western Hemisphere and where most people are living on less than a dollar a day. But to go back to this mass mobilization in 89, that is what brought down the dictatorship of the Prosper Avril government, Lieutenant General Prosper Avril, who had been instated after they realized that there was so much mass mobilization that they better get baby Doc Duvalier out of the country. And it is this initiating committee against the debt which had mobilized the mass organizations, the popular organizations. Ralph?
Yes, Maya, but, you know, we're going to come to that fundamental issue of the debt and the role of U.S. imperialism imposing it and what was the nature of the assumption of responsibility by Jean-Bertrand Aristide apropos the demands of imperialism. An article in The Guardian on the 17th of January, Sunday, U.S. accused of annexing airport. The U.S. military's takeover emergency operations in Haiti has triggered a diplomatic row with countries and aid agencies furious at having their flights redirected. Brazil and France have launched an official protest with Washington after U.S. military aircraft were given priority at Port-au-Prince Airport, forcing non-U.S. flights to divert to the Dominican Republic. Brasilia warned it would not relinquish command of U.N. forces in Haiti, and Paris complained the airport has become, quote, a United States annex. The row prompted Haiti's President René Préval to call for calm. We must keep our cool, coordinate, and not throw accusations at each other. This is The Guardian describing the U.S. military takeover and the exclusion of other countries or powers or any form of aid from getting into the airport. And indeed, the nature of the operation was well articulated in an article by Michel Chasadovsky. The militarization of emergency aid, is it a humanitarian operation or an invasion? The main actors in America's so-called humanitarian operation are the Department of Defense, the State Department, and the U.S. Agency for International Development. U.S. aid has been entrusted in channeling food aid to Haiti, which is distributed by the World Food Program. But the military component of the United States mission overshadows any civilian functions in rescuing this desperate population. The overall so-called humanitarian operation is not being led by civilian government agencies, either FEMA or USAID, but the Pentagon. All decision-making has been entrusted to the United States Southern Command. A massive deployment of military hardware is in preparation. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, confirmed that the United States will be sending 10,000 troops to Haiti, 2,000 Marines, as disclosed in the American Foreign Forces press service on January 14th. Maya?
This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, An Unnatural Catastrophe, the U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti. Ralph?
The aircraft USS Carl Vinson and a complement of supporting ships arrived in Port-au-Prince on the 15th. The 2,000-member Marine Amphibian Unit and soldiers from the U.S. Army's 82nd Airborne were put into play. In contrast to so-called rescue and relief teams, the military has been the priority undertaking. Marines. Everybody knows, the world knows what the Marines are for, stated the Marine spokesman. Marines embark on Haiti response mission, Armed Forces press service on January 14th. Obama and Preval, the presidents of the United States and Haiti respectively, spoke on their phone, but there are no reports of any negotiations between the two governments regarding the entry and deployment of U.S. troops on Haitian soil. This decision was unilaterally imposed by Washington. The amphibious assault ship, USS Baton, amphibious dock landing ships, USS Fort McHenry, the USS Carter Hall, a 2,000-member Marine amphibious unit from the 22nd Marine Expeditionary Unit, 900 soldiers arriving in Haiti on the 15th, the aircraft carrier USS Carl Vinson, a complement of supporting ships, U.S. Coast Guard vessels and helicopters, three amphibious ships, the aircraft carrier, the guided missile USS Normandy, and the guided missile frigate USS Underwood. Guided missile ships to Haiti for food, for humanitarian aid. The U.S. Southern Command, with headquarters in Miami, is the lead agency. Its mandate as a regional military command is to carry out modern warfare.
You know what it sounds like, Ralph? It sounds like a dry run for the seizure of Cuba.
That's precisely what it is, Maya. Cuba, Venezuela. This is an advanced military undertaking. Deploying the earthquake is the opportunity and the rationale for subjugating the Haitian people whose mass uprising is constantly feared. General Douglas Fraser, commander of the U.S. Southern Command, has defined the Haiti emergency as, quote, command control operation. U.S. Southern Command will oversee a massive deployment of military hardware, warships, aircraft carriers, and airborne combat divisions. So, quote, we're getting focused on command and control so we can really get a better understanding of what's going on. MINUSTAH, the United Nations so-called stabilization mission, which has been the surrogate for the U.S. military, has lost a lot of their communication with their headquarters collapsing. So we're looking into robust communication for our command and control operations. We're sending in assessment teams. We're moving ships into the region, small ships, Coast Guard cutters, destroyers. We have a U.S. Navy aircraft moving in that direction. It was at sea off of Norfolk. It'll take a couple of days. We're looking at large deck amphibious ships with embarked Marine Expeditionary units. So the bottom line is, we are going to do what we need. The deputy commander, we are now told, it happens to be, quote, my deputy commander just happened to be in Haiti when this situation occurred. He has been at the airport. So we have a group going in to make sure we can secure the airfields and operate from them. And the commander of MINUSTAH happened to be in Miami in consultation with the U.S. military when the earthquake occurred. That's very interesting.
Ralph, I want to step back a little to the immediate days and what has been so eloquently expressed by Dr. Sanjay Gupta on CNN and also the Dr. Snyderman for MSNBC as preventable deaths. The Israelis sent in a field hospital immediately. Doctors Without Borders and the Paul Farmer Organization were working on the ground immediately. And the Paul Farmer Organization was in the mountains, and their their facilities were not touched. It was possible with vans and trucks and few ambulances to get people to those hospitals. What they're talking about are preventable deaths. And what has happened and what they said is the difference between the earthquake in Haiti and the large tsunami is that in the tsunami in South Asia, people either died or they were safe. There were hundreds of thousands of people who died, but there were not that many people injured. The resources were how to provide food, shelter, and sanitation. Here in Haiti, you had many injuries. And with a temperature of over 80 degrees, a hot climate, you not only have the immediate decomposition within 72 hours of the bodies lying on the street, a public health hazard, you have the problem that any slight wound becomes infected. And with crush injuries, which they're trying to treat, and they didn't have the doctors or the facilities, that is broken bones, that the muscles atrophy and then the kidneys shut down and a person who should have lived dies. And the few who have remained, who have been able to survive these crush injuries, are having to have their limbs amputated. And that Haiti is not a situation where people can manage well once they have limbs amputated. So we have preventable deaths and situations of amputations. Most of all, and why we call this an unnatural catastrophe, is the buildings should not have collapsed. The total Haiti is on a fault zone, a known fault zone, and the construction has more to do with the impoverishment, the forced impoverishment of the Haitian people than would ever occur in an earthquake of this size in the United States. Ralph.
Speaking on ABC's television this week on Sunday, U.S. General Ken Keene, who commands the military task force in Haiti, said United States troops will be here as long as necessary. In fact, on Saturday when Hillary Clinton visited Port-au-Prince, she argued for the imposition of martial law, and she declared, "This decree will give the government an enormous amount of authority, which in practice they will delegate to us."
And Ralph, in my opinion, the hesitancy of Preval to impose martial law is because it eliminates his authority. For the Haitian people, the imposition of martial law is a throwback to the Duval, the Avril, the Cedrus governments, as well as to the massive UN occupation, which they have been resisting. And it is this imposition of martial law facilitating the reoccupation of Haiti by the U.S. Marines that is going to be the downfall of the Haitian government. Let's look at Time magazine, because it expresses well something of which you've been talking about, is the move on the part of the U.S. administration to say that security is the overriding problem in Haiti, and that you can't really distribute aid until you have secure situations. Time magazine, an article, "Will Criminal Gangs Take Control in Haiti's Chaos?" And the article is, as written, states, quote, "As Haitian and international officials try to coordinate an effective response to what is probably the worst disaster to ever hit the Western Hemisphere's poorest country, they'll need to be mindful of the human rats that come out of the capital's woodwork at times like these." End quote. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. The France ambassador to Haiti, Didier Lebret, stated that France's foreign minister Bernard Kouchner lodged protests when the United States blocked French flights carrying an emergency field hospital. He added, "Port-au-Prince is not an airport for the international community. It's an annex of Washington and its military." The U.S. military actually had required any medical or supply force to be diverted from the Haitian airport. The U.S. military has imposed a complete blockade. There are 200 flights going in and out every day, an incredible amount for a country like Haiti. All those flights are with the United States military. Their priorities, quote, and this is from the World Food Program, their priorities are to secure the country. Ours are to feed the people. So we have a very clear delineation on the part of all those nominal aid programs that the population is being deprived of supplies, being deprived of help, being deprived of food, being deprived of field hospitals, while the military operation proceeds apace.
Ralph, I did a calculation. Per capita, there will be more troops in Haiti than the U.S. has sent to Afghanistan for a much larger country. This is important to consider. Also, the destruction of the Haitian infrastructure. People talk about Haiti as if it's a situation that was brought on it by the Haitian people themselves. And it would take an entire series of programs to elucidate the incredible devastation wrought by the United States and the French imperial powers upon Haiti. This has led to a strange situation of destroying the public institutions. First, it was with the privatization of the Haitian institutions, such as the telephone service, and then with the destruction of the medical facilities and also with the huge debt forcing the Haitian government to reduce salaries so that there could be no public sector workers. And as a result, Haiti is the country in the world that has more NGOs, more non-governmental organizations providing ostensibly charity than any other country in the world except India with its billions of people. Imagine that. Per capita, there are more non-governmental organizations in Haiti than in any country except India.
Thomas Jefferson was aghast. In 1791, Haitian slaves revolted against France, establishing the Western Hemisphere Second Republic. The principal author of the U.S. Declaration of Independence feared that this successful Caribbean revolution would foster, quote, a great disposition to insurgency among American slaves, unquote. A war that would end up, Jefferson wrote, in the extermination of one or the other race. To forestall this dread possibility of a slave uprising in the United States, he cut off all trade to the new state, refused to extend a diplomatic recognition, and was preparing for bankruptcy of Haiti. The strategy worked. A century later, Woodrow Wilson sealed Haiti's fate. In 1915, he sent in the Marines, an occupation that lasted into the mid-30s. The occupiers wrote a constitution that granted them unilateral power, built an island-wide road system with forced labor. It's a process of constant and deliberate devastation of Haiti, isolation and blockading of Haiti, menacing and starving out of Haiti. The history that binds the U.S. and Haiti, as the World Socialist website described it on January 15th, a cynical and dishonest editorial in the New York Times, once again the world weeps with Haiti, a country which it describes as characterized by despair and dysfunction that would be a disaster anywhere else but in Haiti is the norm. Look at Haiti, the New York Times intones, and you will see what generations of misrule, poverty, and political strife will do to a country.
Ralph, I think we have to mention, at the current time before this earthquake, only 50% of the population had clean water, had access. 50% of the population was living on less than a dollar a day. Yet, Haiti was devoting its gross national product to paying off multi-millions, tens of millions of dollars each year to the international banking institutions. More money than it spent in medical care, and certainly more money than was ever spent in education, which for the most part is private. This created a situation where, as a study funded by the USAID itself showed, more than 225,000 children are living as virtual slaves, as domestic laborers, because their parents cannot afford to feed and house and clothe them. 225,000 children. It's very important to mention the indemnity debt. It began as early as the rebellion against the French and Haiti gaining its independence. A condition for the recognition of Haiti's independence by the French was paying off the plantation owners. 24 million francs was borrowed to pay off the plantation owners, and Haiti did pay back that debt. Then the U.S. seized the National Bank of Haiti in 1915, took over the bank, and stole $500,000 at the time, bringing it back to the United States, bringing in the Marines to control Haiti and impose foreign investment. The story goes on and on, such that 40% of the gross national product of Haiti is going to pay the debt each year. As I mentioned, $50 million a year, primarily to the United States. And having reduced that, it might be reduced to $20 million. Haiti had been the most productive of the Caribbean islands in the late 1700s, supplying half of the coffee and half of the sugar for Europe. It was a very productive country. It has been devastated, the forest destroyed as a result of the impoverishment of the people. And then, last but not least, the U.S. coming in and destroying all the Haitian pigs, all the pigs at one time, the supposed swine fever, gathering up the Cochon, the Haitian pigs who were immune to the swine fever, destroying every one of them. And these pigs mostly were in the hands of the peasantry, then imposing purchase from the U.S., hogs that could not survive in the Haitian conditions. Consequently, you were destroying the agricultural base for the farmers. Again, with the imposition of the embargoes and the later stages in Haitian history, the U.S. imposed the importation of rice. Haiti had been self-sufficient in growing rice, and instead the U.S. imposed a purchase of rice in exchange for aid. Ralph?
Disney, paying people 8 cents an hour. The entire, what's called Disney's Hell in Haiti, in Haiti Progray. Over the past two decades, U.S. State Department officials have consistently prescribed development of the transformation industry as the antidote to Haitian poverty. 250 factories employed over 60,000 Haitian workers in Port-au-Prince. The wage was $2.64 a day. Those wages were drastically cut. Sweatshops were imposed throughout Haiti. This is, in fact, the constant. The children of Haiti, hundreds of Haitian street kids find haven in the capital's huge cemeteries. That's where they sleep. Baseballs are all made in Haiti. What do you think people are getting for those baseballs? Every baseball that's used in the major leagues is made in Haiti. Major Leagues has generously offered to contribute $1 million to Haiti in the light of this catastrophe. For how many decades have the Haitian children been breaking their fingers and their hands on these baseballs that they're sowing at the rate of starvation wages, virtual slave conditions, the Cintas sweatshops that are imposed throughout Haiti, and indeed, as you mentioned, Maya, the constant accumulation of a debt that is paid off multiple times throughout the history of Haiti. In fact, it was the mobilization against the debt that gave rise to the general strike in Haiti. And indeed, when we had the International Tribunal Against the Debt in Lima, Peru, of which I was one of the six presidents, Jean-Bertrand Aristide endorsed the call for the immediate cancellation of the debt, and the masses seized upon this campaign and the campaign of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and it was considered a popular insurrection. They saw the Aristide candidacy as a means to dismantle the Duvalier's state, the Macoutes. They expected Aristide would lead that struggle, and he was elected with 67% of the vote. But in fact, the realities are, and we have to state this, brothers and sisters, Jimmy Carter informed Aristide that he would keep the troops in the barracks on two conditions. One was that Aristide guaranteed that he would maintain Cedrus as the head of the army in Haiti. In other words, the Duvalierist figure who the United States had trained and prepared would be kept in control of the army. And the second is that Aristide would honor the IMF austerity program in Haiti. Ignoring widespread opposition, as Haiti Progray reported on September 5, 1995, the government of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide pushed ahead with a sweeping World Bank and International Monetary Fund structural adjustment program that devastated the already precarious social and economic situation of most Haitians. Quote, "We know in all countries the structural adjustment program causes damage," conceded Prime Minister Marc Michel in a press conference. But we have something that makes us different from other countries because 3 years of the coup d'etat did 60% of the adjustment. Nevertheless, the Aristide Michel government intends to administer the remaining adjustments, starting with the privatization and complete abolition of public institutions in accordance with the Paris Accords of August 1994. That document negotiated by the World Bank and the IMF with the Aristide government, Haiti Progrès reported, called for the, quote, drastic reduction of tariffs and import controls on open foreign investments, aid to the export sector, massive retrenchment in the public sector, the elimination of price controls, wage restraints, and a full privatization. In its August 10th press conference, Prime Minister Marc Michel outlined some of the first state-run industries to be privatized. He stated that Haiti's state-owned flour mill and cement plant, the two key factories in Haiti, would be privatized through outright sale or through a management subcontract. That out of the 667 flour mills, 150 would remain. That Teleco, the telephone company, then the electrical authority, and the ports and airports would be privatized in accordance with the dictate of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. The union representing the workers at the National Airport Authority at the time denounced this attitude of the prime minister. Quote, we've inherited a bad administration, noted Henri Michel, head of the airport workers, adding the state should not be getting rid of important sources of national income. Prime Minister Michel warned that the Haitian government had been allowed no choice but to pursue aggressive privatization. And indeed, this process, this elimination of the public sector was a predicate for the pauperization of the masses. Those are the circumstances that permitted the government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide to be targeted by the U.S. as it always had been. First, they imposed upon it a program to demobilize, demoralize the population, and then they went in for the kill. But the absolute predicate of all this was the destruction of the popular movement, the demobilization of the masses, and so far from the population being armed, so far from the people being given the arms with which to defend themselves, so far from the people being put in charge of the factories, so far from the public sector emulating the very beginnings of the Cuban Revolution, the IMF and the World Bank was put in control.
Ralph, it was important for the United States to destroy the popular organizations that developed in the community and were the original basis for the Lava Lost movement. And the United States imposed the terminology that these were actually gangs. They called them gangs instead of community organization. And Kevin Pina has on YouTube a documentary that shows explicitly the United Nations going house by house, seeking people, putting X's on the houses in green fluorescent paint that they have intruded upon with like a Nazi campaign throughout the bidonville. To go back to construction, the BBC had an article by Aisha Bhatti, Haiti devastation exposes shoddy construction. Most buildings are made of masonry, bricks, or construction blocks. Peter Haas of Appropriate Infrastructure Development Group says it's not just that they're concrete blocks. There is no rebar to strengthen the concrete blocks, but that the blocks are made in people's backyard and dried in the sun. People are skimping on cement to try to cut costs. They put a lot of water in. The buildings are too thin. You end up with a structure that's innately weak. As Ralph had said, the nationally owned concrete factory, which could have produced cement, was privatized. People don't have access to building materials. They don't have the funds. They are barely surviving.
Alan Nairn, who had been reporting consistently and perhaps the most insightful and honest reporting on the crisis in Haiti over the past three decades, both in the nation, sometimes on Democracy Now!, but ever honest about the collaboration of those who have been professing to be part of a mass mobilization with the IMF agenda. And here is Alan Nairn, Our Payroll, Haitian Hit, October 9, 1995. A notorious gunman charged in the 1993 murder of Haiti's Justice Minister has been sprung from jail with help from U.S. officials. At the time of the assassination, he was secretly on the payroll of the U.S. Embassy. Much of his story has been confirmed by U.S. officials who worked in Haiti. The gunman, Marcel Marisson, worked with U.S. intelligence by serving as an attaché for National Police Chief in 1991 coup leader, Lieutenant Colonel Michel Francois. Marisson's release, which is stunned and angered President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, came days after before he was due to give new evidence to a presidential investigation team probing the assassination of Justice Minister Guy Mélary, as well as the slayings of pro-Aristide businessman Antoine Ismery and the outspoken priest and peasant leader Father Jean-Marie Vincent in 1994. In other words, as the article details in great particularity, it was the Defense Intelligence Agency which was running the Makout and the death squads that were targeting officials, anybody who was opposing the austerity program and the IMF, officials within Lavalas, officials within the Aristide government, who are being eliminated physically and consistently as part of the process of death squad run by the United States, run by the Defense Intelligence Agency, the permanent crime against the people of Haiti.
Ralph, I'd like to close with the fact that the U.S. Coast Guard cutters that are surrounding Haiti have been there before, and that is to prevent an outflow of people to Miami. They have emptied a detention center in South Florida in order to be able to fill it with Haitian refugees. They do not want Haitian people to the United States, people trying to find some way to escape the situation.
The crisis of Haiti is not new, brothers and sisters. It is a permanent crisis of targeting Haiti for devastation, isolation, for pauperization, and for constant death squad attacks. It has been the consistent pattern of U.S. relationship to Haiti from its inception. But the issue before us is not the permanent targeting of a victim people. The issue is not merely the fact that the Haitian masses have never been forgiven for the slave revolt which destroyed the greatest army of the day of Napoleon, which gave rise to the prospect of a generalized uprising of the slaves of the United States. The issue is, how do the people fight back? How do the people defend themselves? How do the spokespersons for the masses fulfill their obligations to those they are supposed to represent? By arming them, brothers and sisters, by putting the people in control of the economy, by having workers control the factories, workers ownership of the land, workers' committees to run the society, workers' militia to resist the foreign occupations, workers' struggle to destroy the crimes of imperialism, because nothing short of that, brothers and sisters, will end the crisis of the Haitian masses. This tragedy, this catastrophe, which is but the current opportunity for imperialism to impose yet again a wave of subjugation upon Haiti, flows from the absence of one fundamental thing: resistance. You cannot implement the program of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. You cannot put in charge of the Haitian army the criminals who served the Duvalier regime and who are at the service of U.S. imperialism. You cannot, as Jean-Bertrand Aristide did, have bodyguards provided by Blackwater and think that you're going to resist the predations of and crimes of the criminals in Washington. The masses will not be defended that way. The masses have never been defended that way. The struggle in Cuba was not resolved that way. The people of the world will not win their freedom that way, brothers and sisters. The crisis is real and immediate, not only for the people of Haiti, but for our own country, and the lessons are the same.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, An Unnatural Catastrophe, The U.S. Crucifixion of Haiti, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com.
We want everybody to mobilize around the issue of Lynn's situation.
Please write Lynn Stewart, L-Y-N-N-E, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, 150 Park Row, New York, New York, 10007, 2 South, and the number is 53504-054. And please, writing to the Lynn Stewart Defense Committee and telling the judge how you feel.
Write to the judge, brothers and sisters. Write to the prison authorities Let's be very clear what we're describing here. Lynn is at risk. Mobilize.
Her legal address, Lynn Stewart Defense Committee, 350 Broadway, New York, New York. The last time when they presented over 1,000 letters to the judge, letters were presented to the judge again.